This is Don Hussig with Loving the Earth, Pollution Free Revolution. Joining us today is Michelle Hurd Riddick. She is with the Saginaw Bay Watershed, and it's in the state of Michigan. And their issue, and I'm hoping it will become more and more an issue for all of us, are these Dow dioxins, which are contaminated for a very, very long period of time and continue to contaminate with very little, if not nothing, having been done about it. The Tittabawassee and the Saginaw Rivers, which empty into Lake Huron at Saginaw Bay. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
Tell us more about yourself.
My name is Michelle Hurd Riddick, as you said. I belong to the Lone Tree Council, which is a 32-year-old grassroots environmental organization in the Saginaw Bay of region, watershed of Michigan, in Saginaw Bay being Michigan's largest watershed. I'm a lifelong resident of this watershed, spent a lot of time in my youth growing up, and swimming and fishing in Lake Huron, and a place very near and dear to me. Again, this has been my home. Environmental activism is my avocation. Professionally, I'm a nurse. I currently work for the Veterans Administration, and after about 22 years of emergency room nursing, I've never in my entire life ever separated out my environmental activism from public health issues, because at the end of the day, environmental issues are always public health issues. Environmental issues do not exist in a vacuum. And, you know, it's always about open spaces and fresh air and clean water and clean air and, you know, how we live and what comes into our bodies. And it's always about it's a quality of life issue. It's a quality of life issue. So I started working on this dioxin issue from Dow Chemical. It's important to note that where I live, I am about 23 miles downriver from Dow Chemical's world headquarters in Midland, Michigan. And Dow Chemical is responsible for the dioxin contamination in the Tittabawassee River and the Saginaw River, which, as you stated, flows out into the Saginaw Bay of Lake Huron. Some of the highest concentrations of dioxin in the nation are found in our rivers here. The total river system is about 32 miles long.
Give us some time, some dates. When did Dow first? What is your understanding of, say, when this contamination started to take place? You know, when did dioxin start becoming a part of these rivers? You know, how far back does that go?
That goes back to about one of the first studies that the then Michigan Department of Natural Resources published a report based on data submitted by Dow Chemical back in about 1976-77 on high levels of dioxin found in walleye in the Tittabawassee River. So there's been a regulatory, a local public awareness of the dioxins in this river since probably the mid-1970s anyway.
Wow, this has gone a long, 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 long time. And say, how long before that were the dioxins probably being put out in the waste? Was it from wastewater discharges from the building?
Right. Exactly. It was effluent discharged from a number of different pipes on the plant site. Now, if you've ever traveled along the Dow Chemical plant site, it's miles. You're not looking at just a few blocks. There were several dozen drainage pipes draining off of the plant site. And remember, Dow Chemical's been at that location since, I believe, the 1890s. So they've continually, for years, used the Tittabawassee River as their sewer. Dow Chemical produced Agent Orange. They produced napalm. They produced any number of herbicides, pesticides. And it wasn't until implementation of the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act and those big pieces of legislation in the 70s that, that started containing and controlling the vast majority of the runoff or the effluent coming from that production facility.
Wow. Is there also, I've heard a little bit about some of the dioxins. Is there also an issue with some to air emissions? necessarily from hazardous waste incineration, or am I mistaken about that?
No, you're absolutely correct. The city of Midland is also contaminated with dioxin. Now, the Dow plant site sits right on the banks of the Tittabawassee River. There are many parts of the river that are not accessible because it's for miles because it's owned by Dow Chemical. But Dow did have hazardous waste incineration for decades, and so the profile, the chemical fingerprint of the dioxins in the city of Midland are different than the chemical fingerprint found in the Tittabawassee and in the Saginaw River, because one was the effluent off the plant, the other was air depositions from hazardous waste incineration.
Okay. Well, what an awful quantity of dioxins and so many people. Let's get started talking about how people first became aware of this. You had mentioned that study in the 1970s. That was a very early stage of people being aware of dioxins in wildlife and the walleye. Where did it go from there? What are the steps that have occurred that have gradually led to the current state of public awareness of this particular problem?
Wow, that's a big question, and there's a lot of information, but I'll try to hone it here. You know, the contamination in the city of Midland probably sparked a great deal of the investigation that was to come along the Tittabawassee River. There was an activist in the early 1980s who used to work for Dow Chemical. Her name was Diane Hebert. Diane is kind of my mentor. She is probably one of the most courageous women I knew. You have to appreciate that at one time the city of Midland boasted more PhDs per capita than any other city in this country. It is kind of a, you know, they kind of live in a bubble in Midland, and it's a corporate community. Dow does great beautification projects in the city of Midland, but it's not without the expectation that they get paid back for that. And so there are many people indebted to Dow for many reasons in the city of Midland, but Diane wasn't. This was a woman who was aware of those air depositions, aware that the EPA was looking in the 1980s at the depositions of dioxin in that city. This was a mother who had breastfed her children and raised her children in that community, and she was outraged by it. Diane really started this. She started looking and talking, and she discovered that these chemicals were being released into the river, and this is still in the 1980s, and there was a huge scandal at that time in the 1980s. Diane did go to Washington, D.C., and she did testify, and she went there and she testified, and what had happened was the EPA had published a report on the toxicities of dioxin, on the toxicity of dioxin, but they allowed Dow Chemical to edit the report. So there was a lot of back and forth and consternation and bitter debate. I mean, Midland stood to lose a lot. They didn't want to be labeled as a highly contaminated community.
Right.
Diane then started, you know, kept her fight up, began looking at the rivers. And in the 1990s, we moved from those 80s, and EPA came in and looked, and they backed off for many, many political reasons, very many political reasons. Dow backed off. Diane continued to pursue this. At the same time, they were attempting to build a nuclear power plant in Midland, and that's where Lone Tree Council kind of met and hooked up with Diane Hebert. And that was in the late 1980s. By 1990s, the state was, because of Diane, they were looking at the rivers. The state of Michigan decided that they needed to start dealing with this. They teamed up with the EPA, and nobody was really pushing or compelling Dow to do anything. Dow had to put in a revetment system. I shouldn't say they didn't make them do anything. They made them put in a revetment system, a wall that went into the ground to stop discharging to the river, and they started enforcing the Clean Water Act. But what they didn't compel Dow to do, the state agencies, was to start characterizing and looking for how much dioxin was in the river, how much was in Midland, right? But
yep.
Diane kept pushing. 1996, the state gave authority to the state under the Resource Conservation Recovery Act to negotiate an investigation, interim response activities, and ultimately a cleanup for the Tittabawassee and the Saginaw River and out into the bay. Dow signed that license. Now, mind you, these negotiations started in 1996. From 1996 until June 12th of 2003, the state negotiated 6 years with Dow Chemical, 6 years to negotiate a contract with Dow to do this cleanup. The contract under RCRA, the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, which acknowledges Michigan's laws, federal laws, hazardous waste laws, was implemented. Things started out fine. By 2004, the legislators in the state, Dow was lobbying them heavy. They had the Chamber of Commerce on board. They had economic arms from various communities on board. They started pushing back at the state, pushing back at the governor, and the governor caved. Every governor, and I cannot make this point enough, the last three governors we have had, two terms of Jim Blanchard, two terms of John Engler, two terms of Jennifer Granholm, and across political spectrums, Democrats, Republicans alike, have never, ever allowed their state agencies to enforce the law and take Dow Chemical to court for failure to honor and take responsibility under Michigan law. They have never been willing to do it.
So they negotiated that agreement with Dow, you know, the state of Michigan agreement with Dow, and then Dow reneged on it. Did Dow never, you know, fulfill their contract?
Dow did some of the characterization of along the river. In fact, they did quite a bit of the characterization, and that's when along the Tittabawassee River. Dow's been much more compliant over time along the Tittabawassee than they have the Saginaw River. But you have to understand that the chemicals, finding the chemicals in the river is a huge driver on this issue, because it's not something Dow can spin very easily. When you look, the state's residential contact criteria is 90 parts per trillion for dioxin. When you find 80,000 on the bank of a river, Dow can't spin that. They can't spin that. When you find 1.9 million parts per trillion in the Saginaw River, Dow can't spin that. So Dow started pushing back, particularly on the Saginaw River, about doing any further investigation. So the Resource Conservation Recovery Act was in place, still is in place to a point. But over the course of this past decade, the state tried and pushed and pushed. Now, RCRA is still a federal program, correct? So EPA has always technically had oversight and partnered very well with the EPA on this, with the state.
Yep.
But what happened was the state, Dow really went political, like I said. The Governor Granholm caved. Whatever Dow wanted, Dow got. When the state finally said, look it, here's your plan for the Saginaw River, this is how you're going to test the Saginaw River and Bay, Dow Chemical in January of 2008, December 2007, I guess, took the state of Michigan to court. The state was then told by the governor's office, you are not going to challenge Dow in court. Even though the state had legal grounds to stand on, they could not challenge them in court. EPA, Dow went to the EPA in March of 2008 and asked the EPA to take it over from the state. And the EPA acquiesced and took it over from the state. We asked for, if the EPA was going to take it over, then we wanted to become a full-fledged Superfund site with listing on the national priorities list.
Yep.
And we were declined that. And the governor did not. And we were told by EPA headquarters that the governor did not want the site put on the NPL.
And so, in other words, if the governor had acquiesced in this, it would have been a full NPL site?
It would have been a full NPL site, fully superfunded. And now we're a superfund alternative site. And we had tremendous concerns about what that meant for this, because the alternative superfund site process has been utilized in a number of other communities, but never, usually on orphan sites, and never on a site as geographically extensive as this site is, and not with a player as big as Dow Chemical. And so we found it, and the very fact that Dow asked for it made us suspect, absolutely positively made us suspect. And so, you know, they were up to no good. And, you know, Dow has a knack, a proclivity, a penchant for laying out several scenarios that they can, setting the groundwork for to play out several different scenarios depending on how things shake out down the road. And, you know, if the state of Michigan, and I will not malign anybody in the Department of Environmental Quality at the state of Michigan. Those are very dedicated professional people who unfortunately had to surrender to the politics of this issue, and as they have in previous administrations. And there have been extremely sordid, ugly, nasty politics. There, in 2002, outgoing Republican Governor John Engler, in the waning days of his administration, attempted to negotiate a consent order with Dow that would have released Dow Chemical from any obligations on the Saginaw River and Bay.
And how outrageous.
Yeah, it was absolutely outrageous.
Outrageous.
But let me go back to the 1980s.
They're not human, are they?
No, well, you go back to the 1980s, mid-1980s, and we had a huge, huge flood in 1986. A vast part of this county was underwater. The Tittabawassee River flooded, homes flooded. It was a 500-year flood. And it rained for 17 days or so. I don't even remember. It just rained and it rained and it rained. I mean, and it rained. And in 1987, Democratic Governor Jim Blanchard signed a consent order releasing Dow Chemical from all responsibility for their releases to the Tittabawassee River for dioxin. And what did the people of the watershed get out of it? We got a boat dock from Dow Chemical. They built a boat dock, and they got released from liability. So Dow has always been able to get away from any specific state law. We have always had to rely on the federal government to some extent to deal with this cleanup, because we had a governor who released this chemical company.
So what does that mean? You know, what is that? You know, you state that again, that they have released from what?
Dow was released from any, it was called the boat launch agreement, and it was a consent order negotiated behind closed doors between the state of Michigan, Governor Jim Blanchard in 1987, and the Dow Chemical Company, releasing Dow Chemical from any responsibility under state law, under Michigan state law, for their chemical releases to the Tittabawassee River.
For all the period of time they did this, you know, for all the dioxin that Dow ever put out.
Yes, yes.
And into the future, whatever they put out.
Yes,
that's,
yes.
So nobody can go to court using state of Michigan law to do anything about this?
It really limited us. Now, there are, you know, which is why we've had to rely on the Resource Conservation Recovery Act federal program and rely on Superfund CERCLA orders to get this done, federal government to do this. And, I mean, how pathetic is that? In return, Dow gave us a boat launch. They gave us a boat launch.
those people that negotiated that consent order, they didn't care. You know,
well, you know what's
back,
interesting is the gentleman who signed the consent order for the DNR is now a lobbyist for Dow Chemical.
Yep. He was well paid for his part in that atrocity.
Yep. Absolutely. And he's extremely well connected politically, and he just kind of has a revolving door into you know, the governor's office in Lansing, and it doesn't matter what administration it is. And just by way of another example, Corps of Engineers built a dredge site to take contaminated sediments for out of the Saginaw River. It's a dredging project for navigational dredging, because we've got these big ships, cargo ships, coming up the river. We were concerned about this dioxin not being characterized. We didn't know what was in the river. They were picking it up, and they were just going to slurry it into this huge, huge pit in the middle of a wild game preserve. And they did it. The state agency and Michigan Department of Environmental Quality said that they needed to put in a slurry wall. Dow was going to be responsible for that slurry wall because it was their dioxins that they were trying to contain. Right? We're going to make this a state-of-the-art facility because we've got to contain these contaminants. Dow hired contractors to write up a report on why that slurry wall to contain these contaminated sediments wasn't needed, and the lieutenant governor of the state of Michigan, John Cherry, overrode his state agency and accepted Dow's report and did not require the slurry wall. So again, you had all of these good, I tell you this to make the point that it is always politics that drives this issue here. It is not the science. You had no less than 10, 12 scientific people at the state of Michigan who say you need a slurry wall in there. You need to contain that. There are sand lenses. There's the potential for leakage into the groundwater. You need to put that slurry wall in. And the lieutenant governor said no. And it didn't happen. So what, personally, I think we're sitting on another potential Superfund site right there. I think that this was a huge waste of the taxpayers' money. What are we paying the people at the state of Michigan for when we don't let them do their jobs, when with the swipe of a pen, a phone call, all of their work, can be nullified? It's absolutely amazing. The power of Dow Chemical is just amazing.
And in the long term, sure, for the moment, for the decade, for even the several decades, the half century, this goes on and the politics seems to be dominant and the Dow gets what it wants. Mm-hmm. But truly, in the big picture, in the long term, all the disease amongst the people mm-hmm. and the wildlife of that huge area that has these chemicals. And that cannot be, no matter what Dow does, no matter what the politicians do, the harm that occurs from exposure to these chemicals exists. It takes place. Things change. Damage is done. And that's been going on and on and on, growing truly larger and larger as the years go by.
Correct. So and in 2005, I'm sorry to interrupt you, you need to know this. In 2005, Michigan Department of Community Health, Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, Michigan Department of Agriculture, with support from the EPA, issued for only the second time in Michigan's history a wild game consumption advisory for the floodplain of the Tittabawassee River, because the contamination is, we're in a valley, so as that river comes down, it flattens out. There's thousands of acres of floodplain that are contaminated. All four of those agencies issued game consumption advisories for deer, turkey, squirrel, and then, there are people who do eat raccoon and rabbit and other critters off of the floodplain. We have, since 2005, enhanced our fish consumption advisories based on collected data and sampling of the fish as well, of the wild game as well as the fish in the river. We have had 1, 2, 3 enhancements of our fish consumption advisories. So we essentially have a resource that not only makes people sick, but that people cannot capitalize on by living there. You cannot safely hunt and fish to subsist, to supplement your diet, or just for the sheer enjoyment of the food. You cannot do it. You cannot safely consume that food. You cannot safely consume those fish. You cannot feed them to your family. So there's, you look at the disease, but there's a huge economic loss here for the
right.
watershed, too. There's a huge quality of life, impairment. And that's all part of when you look at this watershed. The it's a systemic illness, and it crosses many, many venues, from public health to economic development to quality of life to use of the river system. This river system, were it clean, should be thriving. Absolutely thriving with entrepreneurship, with mom and pop bait shops, with canoe liveries, kayaking, boat racing, paddle boats, take your pick. We have none of that. We have none of that.
Well, just as well when it's as poisoned as it is.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yep.
Because I wouldn't encourage anyone to go down there.
Yep, it's horrible.
And the unfortunate thing there, too, is that we do have some of the best walleye fishing in the nation. Some of the best walleye fishing. Now, walleye are some of the cleaner fish in the Saginaw and Tittabawassee River because they don't live here year-round. They live way out into Lake Huron, deeper in the bay in the colder waters. So, and they come up here to spawn. So we don't have, so we still have really good, people do come here to fish for walleye, and we have a couple of huge walleye festivals that draw thousands and thousands of people. But it's always interesting because, you know, amid that macho walleye hunting or walleye fishing mentality that's kind of out there, these men do know. Because when you ask them, do you feed these to your wife, especially these young men, do you feed them to your children? They always tell you no. They may eat it, but they don't feed it to their families.
Yeah, just yesterday I was driving by the General Motors powertrain facility, which is now, you know, no longer in use because of GM's, you know, financial misfortunes. And my dad, he was a veterinarian, and he was the vet at the Hogansburg Cornwall bridge between the U.S. and Canada, as well as the one between Prescott and Ogdensburg and down further west on the St. Lawrence River. And he used to always fish. He fished for walleye there, right across from that huge GM facility on one of the rivers. I think it's the Racket River that flows through there. And I'm just thinking, wow, just that close, but just across the road pretty much from this huge GM site that had a hazardous waste site that was heavily contaminated with PCBs.
I was going to say, PCBs.
Yeah, horrible. The Native Americans have had such a blow from the PCBs that were dumped by, dumped and discharged in wastewater effluent from this GM powertrain facility. And I'm just driving by there and thinking, boy, the old days. When I fished there myself, we ate those fish. We didn't have a clue. I'm certain there were PCBs from GM in that river for sure. And yet, you know, I'd never heard the word PCB back in those days, back in the 60s.
You know, I will tell you, along the Saginaw River in the 1990s, we had a number of General Motors facilities. And I'll be the first to tell you, Dow Chemical is not the only contributor of chemicals to the Saginaw River. And seven other, you know, the Saginaw River is fed by four or five other good-sized rivers, including rivers in the Flint River running through Flint, Michigan, and a number of GM plants there. But what did happen in the 1990s was General Motors was responsible for a huge, huge PCB contamination along the Saginaw River. And there was a natural resource damage assessment done, and the tribes were involved, and the EPA and everybody. And Dow pushed back a little bit. But they didn't push back for long. They didn't do what Dow did. They didn't go out there and spin that PCBs were not toxic. They didn't try to manufacture uncertainty about PCBs.
Yeah.
Eventually, General Motors stepped up. They ponied up the money, and they cleaned up the river. And today, the ratio of dioxins to PCBs are 50 to 1. I mean, General Motors really, to a great extent, was a model corporate citizen on this. This was a GM town. We were not a Dow Chemical town. Dow Chemical was Midland. General Motors was Saginaw and Bay City. And, you know, so GM stepped up. I'm sure at the end of the day here, when we get to having to really deal with issues on the Saginaw River and Dow Chemical is going to pull the GE card, and they're going to try to bring every other responsible party to the table to bring them into court, and they are going to slow this process down legally for, you know, decades. I have no doubt about that. But the other thing that it's not just, you know, there's a chemical fingerprint in this river system that belongs exclusively to Dow Chemical. And there are about 9 or 10 very specific fingerprints directly tied to Dow's chlorophenol processes and chemical processes, other chemical processes at that plant. But there are also what they call potential constituents of interests. PCOIs. There are 200 other chemicals that are found in the Tittabawassee and Saginaw River that are that came from Dow Chemical. There's toluene, PCB18, parathion. I mean, the list just goes on. Arsenic.
How many chemicals did you say there were?
200.
Isn't it just truly ghastly? You know, how could that poor river,
And it is a beautiful river. It is a beautiful, beautiful river. And the beauty of the river truly, truly belies the toxicity of it. And but Dow has been able, and you know what's interesting is you think about this, Dow denied, the last time I recall, it was a radio TV interview I was doing with Dow on the panel in January of 2003. So as recent as January of 2003, Dow was still denying that the dioxins were theirs. As recently as 2003, even though they were the ones who said it put out the report in 1978 that there were dioxin in the walleye of the Tittabawassee River. But they, once it was discovered and, you know, everybody, the media was jumping all over this, Dow was like, not ours, not ours. Well, when they could no longer deny the fingerprint, then they came out and said, look, this stuff isn't toxic. The only thing dioxin causes is chloracne. And,
That is still heard around.
There's, mm-hmm.
I was talking to this lady's name is Heidelore Fiedler. She's with UNEP over in Geneva, and she's in the chemicals unit of UNEP, and she's telling me, well, large quantities of dioxin are known to cause no cancer. You know, I just could not believe this, that there are these people in these high positions, these high scientific positions, mm-hmm. that will still talk this kind of absolute
nonsense.
Doggerel.
Yeah.
If you think about what science is, there's a consensus on amongst scientists who have no, you know, vested interest, who have no reason for choosing to diminish the toxicity and the cancer causation that's involved with dioxin exposure.
Right. And, you know, Linda Birnbaum, who used to be with EPA, one of the leading experts on dioxin in this country. We brought Linda Birnbaum here. She did a power presentation to the community. A number of people from Dow were in the audience. And she said, dioxin is toxic across all species, across all systems. And we are finding that dioxin is having human health effects at background levels.
That's the important words,
yes.
Background levels.
Yes, yes. Our background levels in Michigan are roughly 8 parts per trillion. Again, along the Tittabawassee River, you have concentrations that exceed 40,000. You have concentrations in people's backyard in public parks of 10 and 12,000, 5,000, 1,400 right outside people's back doors. There were homes. The state came in the about mid 2004, 2005, and started doing dust sampling in people's houses. Yep. There were people who had concentrations of dioxins in their carpet higher than the state's 90 parts per trillion.
Wow.
Just from tracking it in off of their property.
And
but
so
they raised their
kids. Why haven't those people gone, you know, just ballistic and started picketing and putting up barricades on the street?
They did. And they filed a class action lawsuit that was certified. Their class was certified in circuit court in Saginaw County. Dow appealed it to the Michigan Appeals Court. The appeals court upheld it. Then Dow appealed that to the Michigan Supreme Court, and the Michigan Supreme Court just kicked it back last year to back here to circuit court, and they have yet to initiate trial. So, but Dow...
Just for a moment, how does that relate to, see, you told me how that the lieutenant governor had
right.
signed that consent order saying that
mm-hmm.
none of the, you know, there was no accountability on dioxins
right.
for Dow in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and yet they're letting them go a little, they're letting them run a little bit with this law?
Well, because this is a civil suit. This is a civil suit. This isn't a regulatory action. This is a civil suit. These people are filing for property damages.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a class of citizens suing the company in civil court versus, you know, the ability to sue them under a regulatory
thing.
It's
so complicated, you know, all these
It does. But these people are, you know, they're not going to have their day in court for a long, long time because Dow has an army of lawyers,
See, this is what we run into. How do the average people that get sick from chemical exposure, how do they do battle with these giants?
Right. Yeah, they don't. They don't. They lose. And, you know, and the unfortunate thing is that these people were angry at first. They turned out. But they have been so let down by their elected officials, by the agencies. You know, it's interesting. If you look, we have had so few. I mean, Jennifer Granholm, Governor Granholm, has been a huge disappointment. When she was candidate Granholm in 2002, it was her department. She was our former attorney general. It was her department who went after her predecessor for that illegal consent order in 2002. And she came here, and she promised this river would be cleaned up. She promised there would be accountability. She promised that public health protection would be a priority for her. She delivered on none of it. And in fact, in 2004, when Dow Chemical sent a lengthy mailer out to residents along the Tittabawassee River that talked about the toxicity of dioxin and skewed the science, and it was so full of misinformation, the toxicologists at the state that had been working on this were outraged, up to and including the one who had calibrated the 90 parts per trillion and was really familiar with the science of dioxin. They crafted a letter to go to the residents rebutting Dow's misinformation. It was sent to the governor's office, and the state was never allowed to send it out to those residents. So not only did she do what Dow wanted, she took that overt step that to actually interfere with the science people who were trying to do their job and protect public health. That, for me, may be one of the most egregious, outrageous activities I have ever seen. An elected official take. Absolutely unbelievable.
She must have no integrity, no conscience, no caring, you know, for human life at all.
Yeah, I have absolutely. She's just been a very, very big disappointment on this issue. We had such high hopes. When I look back to her election and her coming to office in 2003, we were so full of hope, so full of hope. They brought us to Lansing, a number of us from the community. They sat us down, said, this is what we're going to do. It's a new day in Lansing. Transparency is going to rule. And slowly but surely, with the help of the Chamber of Commerce, with the help of Congressman Dave Camp from Midland, with the help of our own local legislators, that transparency eventually went away. Dow was actually put back in. And one of the most egregious things that happened was that in 2005 or 2004, the summer of 2004, Dow was pushing back so hard with the help of the legislators and the Chamber of Commerce that the governor actually sent the lieutenant governor and Dow behind closed doors, and they came up with a new kind of a framework to incorporate into this RCRA process, and it actually got rid of the existing community involvement process. And we went to these quarterly meetings where the state had to actually vet their presentations with Dow Chemical before the public meeting.
Is it getting worse or is it getting better?
You know, what's happening right now is the EPA came in and they took over, and EPA documented very heavily because Dow could never get the stuff that they were, the work plans that they were supposed to submit to the state that were consistently deficient. And you have to ask, you have to recognize it's by design. Dow has an army of regulatory lawyers, engineers, and scientists, some of the best in the world, and they can't get it right time and time again. Year after year, they keep submitting deficient work plans that the state had to keep reviewing and help and keep meeting with Dow. Very, very tax resource expensive to the taxpayer, right? Time, right? And they never did it right. The EPA documented that heavily. Then Dow asked for EPA to take it over using the Superfund alternative site process, and this is where we are today. And the public is fatigued on the issue. I'm not really sure what EPA, you know, they signed an administrative order on consent, but now everything's being negotiated behind closed doors.
Well,
I file multiple FOIAs over the years. EPA's been very good about responding to them. Now, you know, for the most part, the vast majority of documents I've gotten lately are blacked out pages. They're redacted. They can't talk to us about anything. We only get to see the end product. We don't know how they arrived at it. We don't know what the other options were. And the EPA put together a community advisory group that I was on, recently resigned from. Because I think Dow has too much control over the people on that community advisory group. I think the Chamber of Commerce has too much control. So I'm going to, you know, my goal is to go back to where the citizens are, and we'll, you know, try to devise our own reinvention of our public process and continue to pressure the EPA for information and to give input and to secure our own technical advisors. Because right now, our only our resource for the community is a grant from Dow. And you can bet Dow's going to have some say on who that person's going to be. So, yeah, I think there's some very well-intentioned people at EPA, but the big mistake EPA made with this administrative order on consent was to put Dow back in the driver's seat. Our hope was that if they were taking this over, that they would come in and say, this is how it's going to be done, this is what you're going to do, or we're going to do it for you and we'll send you the bill. They didn't do that at all. They've created another venue for Dow to create more delays. And for industry, any delay is a win.
Yeah, that's the whole idea. You know, just
it is.
Keep on making the big money without paying for any of the cleanup or any,
right,
you know, lawsuits.
Right.
Just keep on making the money as if it was the old days, and yet it's not the
right
old days. People
right
are poisoned.
Right.
The people have the knowledge. This is so ghastly, so out.
Yeah. And the Dow shareholders, for the most part, as long as Dow is turning profits like they are, the shareholders are, you know, a lot of them, not all of them by any means, but, you know, they're just kind of just follow the money. Dow's making money, and here we are. And every year, Andrew Liveris gets up, or whoever the current CEO is. It is Andrew Liveris at this point in time. But every year, Mr. Liveris gets up there and says, we're working with the agencies. Well, they are, but they're not making any progress. And these shareholders need to know that since 1996, when this whole issue began to be addressed in earnest along the river system, less than 2 miles of river has been cleaned up. Less than 2 miles of river since 1996. We have 32 miles of river. We've got 30 to go.
It'll be 20 years. It'll be 20 years in no time.
And right. Well, and
same,
even 30 miles of river, it's really 60 miles of river because you've got two sides.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's 60 linear miles that have to be taken care of, and thousands of acres. And you know, it would be one thing, you don't want to clean up the river, but Dow fought posting the rivers for the fish advisories. They fought the state and you know, put out their own press releases after the game advisory came out that they disagreed.
This is the thing. they are interfering with the little bit of good government is capable of doing in these mm-hmm. terrible political situations that they exist in.
Right.
Those people, that Dow, just think they poisoned all these people and all these animals. And now they're making that worse by lying about the
mm-hmm.
effect of the poisoning, you know,
exactly.
the effect of having this exposure.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost mind-boggling to think how liable, you know, how much damage they are liable for.
Mm-hmm.
It goes really, truly beyond them poisoning the place. This matter of lying, deceiving the people about what is entailed in the exposure goes far beyond having just poisoned them.
Right. Well, a conscience, I mean, having a corporate conscience doesn't even come into it. You know, the responsible care moniker that's trademark, you know, came out after Bhopal. And it's just it's a marketing tool. It's a public relations tool, and that's all it is. And but as long as Dow continues, I mean, their philanthropy downriver increased exponentially as the dioxin was discovered in the rivers. The more dioxin, it seems like the more dioxin we found in the rivers, the more money the communities got. And Dow has their diamond plastered all over everything. I mean, every little bit of work that they do, they put their diamond up. They sponsor, you know, any number of festivals and civic activities. And we've kind of become Dow Chemical in the Tri-Cities and no longer General Motors. But, yeah, it's and that so many and you know, one of the things I've always said that Dow was able to do with manufacturing uncertainty, not just manufacturing, but making that uncertainty stick in people's mind,
yep.
is it did something worse than making people support Dow. It gave people a neutral place to go to where they didn't have to take a position.
There you go.
And it's a very comfortable place for gutless politicians to go to.
Yep.
Well, we don't really know. Well, we don't really. Yeah, we do know. But as long as Dow manufactures that uncertainty and these people can say that there's a debate out there about the toxicity of this chemical or there's disagreement, like climate change, like anything else,
yes.
it gives gutless politicians a place to go to not take a position. So a lot of local state politicians, they've chosen not to get involved and have sought sanctuary in that nebulous kind of world of uncertainty about dioxin.
Well, that is the very world that exists with the US EPA dioxin reassessment, and especially
right.
the cancer part of the dioxin exposure and human health reassessment.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
matter of this endless controversy over does dioxin cause cancer and how much cancer does it cause, especially at these background levels of exposure. But the true fact of the matter is, you know, cutting through just this created for a purpose, meaning prolonging obfuscation, just keeping this going forever as industry chooses to have it go on. If you were to say, survey scientists of good intention, people that just want to use knowledge to prevent disease, which is the purpose of looking at exposure and health effects, if you were to look for the consensus among them, they would all say dioxin causes cancer. It causes cancer at background levels. It causes a significant amount of cancer, an unacceptable amount of cancer at background levels.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of Dow's dioxins, this is just way beyond, you know, any kind of like question that it's an unacceptable amount of cancer that's being caused. And then you mentioned there's all these other diseases that are also being caused, according to Dr. Birnbaum. And so really, we're just talking about varying degrees and kind of like these further and further afield, you know, kind of bigger and bigger scale, kind of more global kind of aspects of this argument over dioxin and disease and dioxin exposure and cancer outcome. And I'm thinking if the EPA working alone and in, say, with this SAB, this Science Advisory Board and the Dioxin Review Panel of the SAB, and then some public input from these Dow scientists and these Vinyl Chemistry Council and these Chloride Chemistry Council and all these various vested interests, if they can't get this dioxin and cancer issue fixed in the dioxin reassessment, how's it going to turn out in Midland and in Michigan, you know?
Right, and that's, we hang in the balance. They have, because of the uncertainty, because of the lack of a concrete science-based number being put in place by EPA, we will be held hostage by Dow Chemical.
Exactly.
And until that happens.
I'm sure.
And we, you know, even with our 90 parts per trillion, the state, because of the governor, acquiesced to using the EPA's 1,000 parts per trillion. We went backwards.
Yeah, horrible. It should be 3.7 parts per trillion to be cancer protected.
And exactly.
And maybe not even that, because the cancer slope factor that EPA used in coming up with that 3.7 or whatever it is, I think it's 3.7 parts per trillion, that was actually a lower cancer slope factor than what is in the diastereomy assessment. It's not the same one. The one that's proposed in the diastereomy assessment is higher than that level that was used in coming up with those PRGs, these preliminary remediation goals for the soil cleanup of dioxin. So it should even be smaller than that. It should be like, down, say, like maybe one part per trillion.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, for us, you know, I mean, I know there were a lot of people out there who were not happy with that PRG of 72, but we were happy with that because it validated our position that the state's 90 was closer to where the science was than the outdated number that we were using of 1,000 parts per trillion.
That 1,000, it was meaningless. They just picked that number. There was never any science that was like
to
create that number.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't. And I mean, the 1,000 parts per trillion was from the 1980s. There's been so much more science since then,
right. And
it only looked at one exposure pathway. So, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm anxious and I'm nervous. And Lisa Jackson, Administrator Jackson, told us that she would release that dioxin reassessment by the end of this year. And I don't know that I think that's going to happen, because everything we're seeing this huge pushback from industry.
Huge.
And I don't know if the Obama administration can stand up to that in
these
economic times. I don't know if they can.
The billions of dollars that will be involved, if they were to clean up to the cancer protective standard, the billions would be so much more billions than what they would do if they were to clean up to the, you know, anything less than that. Say they clean up to the 90 parts per trillion, or the 70, or the 3.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between doing that to cancer protective based on the science that exists now would be billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. They have everything to lose.
Right. And there's a part of me that wonders if, you know, that is there a strategy on the part of industry on a number of sites, including this one here, to get something locked up in an agreement ahead of this number being assigned?
Probably so.
And is EPA part of that we're going to get a couple of these big sites, including ours, we're going to get the agreements in place for the cleanup, and then we're going to throw that number out, and industry's not going to be held to that new number? You know, in my mind, that's a very strategic a maneuver that Dow would embrace, and they would try to do. And, and you know, there's been a lot of talk from industry about the cost for cleanup on these sites and impacting the bottom lines in industry and the whole bit. I just remain really, really anxious, and for my community. And anxious, not just because of the cleanup, but nervous and anxious that perhaps this administration isn't going to be any different than the other administrations, that we really haven't seen change that we can believe in, that we really haven't turned the corner yet.
I've not seen any corners being turned. Continue to have this position that our country is ruled by corporations.
Mm-hmm.
The Congress is totally controlled by them.
Right.
And that's,
well, I don't think we'll change anything in this country until we have serious, serious public funding of campaigns.
And it's gone backwards to that Supreme Court decision.
It has.
Corporations, this carte blanche.
United, yes. Yeah, absolutely has. And now you have the Chamber of Commerce, you know, taking all this money from foreign donors. And these are troubling times. I'm not finding a whole lot of comfort or solace in a lot of things with this right now. But onward and upward with our fight here, and we're going to continue to engage the agencies and to be out there and to be outspoken and to be as articulate and.
How are the grassroots? How are the individual people, see the mom and dad and the kids that live along these rivers in this floodplain? What are they doing to reduce their dioxin exposure?
A lot of them have heeded the warnings that the state put out, telling them. I know some parents who restrict the use of their backyard down by the river. They don't let their kids go down there and play anymore. A lot of them have put in raised garden beds. I know a couple of people who've built mud rooms so that they're not tracking into the house. There are people who wear masks when they mow their lawns because dust
wow.
inhalation is a huge. Yep. Huge pathway.
Dust masks to mow the lawns that are dying.
Yeah. Did you happen to watch The Long Shadow?
No.
Yeah. It's up on the Tittabawassee River Watch website.
Okay.
It opens up with Kathy and Gary Henry, who are the lead plaintiffs. With Kathy mowing the lawn. And I think, you know, for them, the thought of having to wear a mask, I mean, talk about being denied the use of your property. Who buys a house thinking you have to wear a mask to protect yourself from your lawn?
I would run that house.
Yeah, and so people have done that. Now, Dow was required as part of their interim response activities with significant enforcement from the EPA back in 2006, 2007, to go in the public parks and stuff on the trails. They have to go in and put wood chips down after every flood to put a barrier between people and the contaminated soil. They had to go in and clean out a lot of ductwork in homes that were really dusty and had higher levels of contamination on the property and in their homes. They replaced some carpets. They did some wall washing. They had to pave one street. So they have been required to do some contouring of landscape and that in areas that were highly exposed. But again, it's a very small, very few homes. There are river residents who are afraid to let anybody on their property because if they acknowledge there's dioxin, from a real estate standpoint, it becomes a disclosure issue, just like lead or anything else.
Yeah.
And so I am sympathetic to these people. I mean, we have been accused of trying to destroy property values. I didn't put that dioxin. Lone Tree Council
didn't
put the dioxin on your property.
The dioxin destroyed the property value, and Dow
did
the dioxin.
That's
they
right.
Destroyed it.
And, yep, but trust me, there are several homeowners who, you know, think that I've got a spiked tail and horns growing out of my head I just want to ruin their property values. And I understand, I own a home. My home is my life's investment. I understand that. But I also understand that you'll get your property value back and it will increase when your river is cleaned up.
Right.
And that it isn't just about your piece of property. It is about everything flowing through that river. People have said, well, she doesn't live on the river, but I live in the watershed. These rivers belong to me as much as they belong to you or anybody else in this state. So, it has. It's been a contentious issue. In fact, in the one community that has, it's along the Tittabawassee River. It's a kind of a bedroom community of Midland, although it's in Saginaw County. The community's called Freeland. They have a huge walleye festival every year, mammoth, one of the largest ones in the state. Their Lions Club actually created yellow caps that said dioxin my ass on it, and they sold them.
What a bunch of jerks.
Yeah. I mean, it was really and for the Lions Club, as a rule, this is a great civic organization. They do a great deal of work for the blind, and
and to come out.
But when
so
you look
far
at diabetes causing blindness in this country,
right.
and you
yeah.
look at the number of Vietnam veterans exposed to Agent Orange who are compensated for their diabetes and have all of these eye problems, you know,
right.
that was just a little bit cruel.
Yeah.
And some people kept the hats for souvenirs. They did stop selling them. But they actually thought it was funny. And one of the creators of those hats is now the township supervisor.
They probably made a lot of political hay out of it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Beautiful.
And,
I find that shocking, truly. And yet it's par for the course. There
mm-hmm.
are so many politicians in our part of the world, you know, up here in the San Lawrence River Valley, they truly they flourish by being as brutal as they
yes.
can possibly be
mm-hmm.
as far as the public complaining about pollution, and these politicians will just don't talk to me about that, and they flourish.
Right, right. And the thing is because I think the public, we expect so little. The bar is so low. We expect so little out of our politicians that, they take advantage of the situation. It's how politicians talk about, you know, there's this huge campaign in Michigan advertising tourism. It's called Pure Michigan. The commercials are beautiful. Tim Allen narrates them. And they show the very best, beautiful places of Michigan. And they're all about our water. But everybody wants to talk about the Great Lakes, about our water in the aggregate. We need to protect our water, but they never want to talk about the specific dire straits of certain parts of the river systems that feed into this, of the contaminants that are getting into this. And they're less inclined to do it when there is a huge corporate power that is responsible for it, because then it requires them to take on the corporate beast. And there are few politicians that have the gonads to do that. It just doesn't happen. And so I stopped being a registered member of any political party. I don't endorse candidates. None of that, because they, for the most part, I find, you know, they're disingenuous. They may have one or two passionate causes, but if you cannot find the backbone and the strength to defend the public on public health issues, if in this Great Lakes state of Michigan, so clearly defined by our waters, cannot defend the right of people to fish and eat clean fish and secure clean fish and for the cost of a fishing license feed their families, if you cannot defend that, you know, you're not worthy, in my mind, to be an elected official. You're not really representing the people.
And they're not, yeah. and they haven't been for decades.
No.
And generations, and it just goes on and on.
No. And
we just keep feeling like revolution, revolution, revolution. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the solution.
Right.
You know,
that right. And I think one of the other problems is too, is because I've never expected elected officials to be the guardians of the Great Lakes, but I have expected the people to be the guardians. And I think
they're not either.
But you know when people would become the guardians? If you tried to start diverting water out of the Great Lakes down to Texas, Colorado, these people in this state would, I mean, it would be a unifying cause. But we can't seem to get on the same page over toxics.
Why can't people get unified over being poisoned? You think that, I would think, you know, if you were just like looking at this from outer space and, you know, where were these Martians thinking about these people on Earth, you'd think that the one issue that would galvanize them and turn them into this, you know, this formidable force, the general public,
mm-hmm.
would be having been poisoned, having their life taken away from them, this crappy
right.
life of being
right.
sick, you know, all the time,
right.
you know, their kids
right.
sick and their relatives sick and, I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
You could, you know, if you walk along the Saginaw Bay, not far from where, 15, 20 miles from where I live, and now the bay is one of the longest freshwater contiguous wetland stretches in the nation.
Hmm.
It is a wetland. It is not a sandy beach. But people who live along there want it to be a sandy beach, And so they want to keep grooming and using herbicides and doing all of this stuff. But they do want their water quality to be good, and I understand that. You know, we have all of these chemicals coming down the Saginaw River. We have sewer overflow. We have more E. coli warnings in the summertime than after a heavy rain than you could shake a stick at. Stay out of the water. And we've got ag runoff into ditches, small streams, and tributaries that, you know, there's a level of muck and along the bay that's just absolutely disgusting. You cannot walk out into the water without this nasty, silty, black, green slime sticking to you. But nobody wants to pay higher taxes to clean up water. They don't want to pay higher taxes or pay for the infrastructure for sewer overflows. They don't want the heavy hand of government regulating. And I'm like, so how do you clean this up? How do you clean it up?
Yeah, exactly.
Quite frankly, I've reached a point. I'm tired of people telling me what I can do to protect the environment. What can corporations do to protect the environment? And what is their responsibility?
It's outrageous.
But we never want to talk about that.
Yeah, and because I think we have been talking about this matter of pollution and industry and politics, but then there's also this whole other matter of human kind of like what are their – you know, how much of a human being are they? You know, what is their integrity? What is their character? What is their caring about, you know, water or life or health or, you know, just justice? And that is, that we are so short on that. You know, there's just...
You know, one of my favorite quotes from Bill Maher, I just absolutely love Bill Maher, but one of my favorite quotes, and he said it so emphatically one night, you are what you do. And I think that says it all. You may be able to take it a little further. You're not just what you do. You are what you don't do, what you choose not to do.
Sure.
And I sometimes analogize that this issue here, the failure, would politicians ride a public wave or outcry? Would they ride the wave of a public outcry to have this cleaned up if it was large enough? Oh, hell yeah, they would.
Probably.
But they won't lead on the issue.
Yeah.
And like so many other causes or issues, be they large or small, they don't really die because of the opposition. They die because people choose to sit on the fence. They choose not to take a position. And I think that's where we are on so many issues in this country. We're fatigued. We're tired. Everything, every conversation becomes a battle.
Yep.
And people don't want to engage in that anymore.
Overrun. You know, a very rough road we're on. And you know, the truth of it is, there's rougher parts of this road ahead because we've lived on the cream of poisoning and casually, just carelessly exposing people and using chemicals and making money and having like this kind of certain appearance and this certain degree of something that people wanted. But now it's all falling apart because people are sick and it's just going to keep getting worse. And there truly is no, I do not see the way clearly. I do not see the way clearly. I haven't figured out how I think it's going to turn out. It might be just ghastly, you know, just if it just gradually declines into an uglier and uglier situation where people are brutalized and just less caring.
Right,
and
right.
More
well,
just
I think, you know, Emmanuel Schitt Garcia did such a fine job in the idiot cycle bringing home, you know, those responsible for contaminating the environment, for pollution, for contaminating the food chain, and then causing these cancers and then profiting from the illness. And you know, it's just this kind of like this closed system, and she did a really good job, and I would encourage any of your listeners, if you know, if they have the opportunity, to get out there and see The Idiot Cycle or obtain a copy of it. It is more than food for thought.
Well, what we're going to do is, as soon as that becomes available, and it's my understanding that it is now, that The Idiot Cycle is now available on the, you know, the website for The Idiot Cycle,
yes,
that it can be actually rented off the internet. We're going to do that and try to get people to watch it, because it is right in the middle of what we're all about. We're all about government, dioxin, and cancer.
Yes, yes. And what you find from watching The Idiot Cycle, too, or what you'll discover, is this isn't just happening here. It's happening around the world. You see the global reach of the corporations, and you see how individuals are impacted right in their own homes, in their small businesses, in their, you know, in their daily lives. I think one of the most, there's a woman who lives on the Tittabawassee River in the documentary, and her name is Alice Buckhalter, and she raised her entire family on that river. And her husband was a physician, and he died of a very, very rare form of cancer. And she has a very compelling story to tell, as does the woman who lives in Sarnia, talking about the Indian tribes and all of the pollution coming along, you know, that stretch of the river, St. Clair. And so it's very compelling because it's about real people and how their lives are being touched by these chemicals and how it's falling on the deaf ears of government. And those who are charged with regulating and protecting and the revolving doors and all of those other little sordid details that we all know about, but are so, I think, ubiquitous and commonplace that we're numb to it. It has become the expectation.
The fact of the matter is this issue, see, our issue is different than your issue. We don't have a particular, we could certainly focus on dioxin in the St. Lawrence River and make, you know, something out of that. We just haven't gotten around to that. Because, see, we came at this more from this kind of food supply, general, average, all the animal fat food supply kind of subject area. This dioxin contamination and POPs contamination and PBDE contamination and hexachlorobenzene contamination and DDT contamination and PCB contamination, this is, you know, that's our main issue, is the presence of these POPs, these carcinogenic POPs, in the animal fat of our nation's food supply and the world's food supply. And so we feel that people really should be up in arms about that, let alone what you have to deal with being imposed on top of the animal fat that people eat, you know, all these dioxins in those rivers. That exposure exists in addition to the exposure of the contamination of the food supply. And we just cannot believe that people can't get excited about this.
Right, right. But, again, I think one of the things I've often felt, living in an area that's been an industrial hub for so long, and, I mean, we had a lot of General Motors manufacturing going on here, foundries, assembly, parts, I shouldn't say assembly so much, but parts plants. We're born here, those of us who live here, are born here aware that there are chemicals out there. Again, ubiquitous enough that they're commonplace for us. There's a certain numbness expectation that this is just how it is. But I would like to think that as science progresses and we learn more about this, that we don't accept the status quo, that
that's
this
right.
is just the way it is.
Yes.
We know more now. I mean, what we knew, we didn't know
exactly.
a lot about mercury. I played with mercury when I was a kid.
That's right. Yep.
We didn't. I probably had. I know I had lead paint in my house.
Oh, yeah.
But would I put a child in a lead paint house today if I could avoid it? Hell, I wouldn't put a kid in that house. I wouldn't let him play with mercury. But it's like if those chemicals don't have a corporation attached to their name, then we can regulate them and we can educate the public on them. I mean, Detroit, the city of Detroit, did a phenomenal job on getting out there on the lead paint issue. They did great work on educating the public because there was nobody pushing back. But go out there and try to educate the public on dioxin confronted by Dow, because Dow will push back.
Oh, yeah.
Dow will push back.
We have tried for years to get the New York State Department of Health just to tell the residents of the state of New York that dioxins contaminate all the animal fat to the extent that it imposes more than acceptable amount of cancer outcome. In a state that has higher cancer rates than most other states, that has parts of the state, like the San Arturo Valley, that have higher cancer rates than the average for New York State, certainly ghastly amounts of cancer. I know people that everybody they know is dead of cancer. There are sections of road out in the farmlands of St. Lawrence County where nobody lives on those roads. They've died of cancer. There are deserted houses. There are ruined lives. There are, it's just,
I had
all
a woman send me an email. She was a nurse, lived in Midland, Michigan, and sent me an email about the house that she grew up in, not far from the Dow plant site. And she listed from age 5 until age 15, every house who had somebody die of cancer. Church-going, non-teetotaling or teetotalers, and both husband and wife work for Dow and both died of pancreatic cancer. What do you think the odds are, huh? In the general population.
Yeah.
And from house to house, cancer, 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 on that whole block, that whole block. And she's not the only one. You know, there were emails from former Dow employees that we received talking about how they used to just willy-nilly dump stuff in the river. That's how they got rid of it. An email went to the DEQ probably 2006. Some guy was hired by Dow. He wanted to know where the boundaries of the 100-year floodplain were, where he could safely put his family. And he's going to work for Dow. So, I mean, the anecdotal stories that people have to say, you could write, you know, a compendium, an encyclopedia, whatever, with it.
Right.
There are so many stories out there. And, you know, if time permitted, if I was retired, if I had, I would do nothing but compile those stories. Just compile those stories.
Quite a work. Yep. That would be a tremendous public benefit to put that together.
Yep, it would. And
let's talk about one more thing. Tell me one more thing, and then we'll wrap this up. Tell me about the breast cancer study that was done that is involving the inhabitants of these floodplains.
That study was done, was published in Environmental Health Perspectives, I believe. It was a peer-reviewed study. And what they found was there were these high incidence of breast cancer in these areas that were most heavily saturated with dioxins, whether it was air deposition or effluent.
Okay.
And that although they didn't say that it was a cause, the suspicions were high enough that they felt that this initial study was the basis to proceed with further investigation. And, you know, and it's interesting, is October being Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yes.
Within my own circle of family and friends, I know no less than 9 women diagnosed in the last 5 weeks with breast cancer, including my mother and my sister-in-law. And so, and you also have to look that in the 1960s, 1970s, and part of, I believe it was the 1980s, the women in the city of Midland nationally were in the top 10 consecutive decades for soft tissue sarcoma. Yet,
the top 10 cities
with soft tissue sarcoma in women.
I see. Yep.
And the thing is that being upper middle class affluent people with access to insurance, they should really be a healthier community. Yet even today, their incidence of diabetes is higher than the state average in the city of Midland.
Hmm.
And again, affluent, educated, mostly white community. And with, you know, and with that goes people who have insurance, people who have health club memberships, people who exercise. I mean it's a given that exercise. But yet they still have this higher number there. But there is no bigger apologist for Dow Chemical than the Midland County Health Department.
Boy,
absolutely
that
unbelievable.
The Midland County Health Department, I'll bet they are worse than our St. Lawrence County Health Department, which is going very far into the realm of being horrible.
Yeah.
I'll bet.
I would like to learn more
about the Midland County Health Department.
They supported that illegal consent order back in 2002. They supported the use of the 1,000 parts per trillion instead of the more. They have. But it's just absolutely unbelievable. And one of their health officers actually wrote a two-part opinion piece that was published in a number of newspapers, basically saying there's no problems with dioxin.
Where did these
that the science isn't in.
How dare they say something like that?
Yeah, this is a public health department. Mm-hmm.
Public health department, and they're obviously just these stooges for doubt.
Well, Midland kind of live in a bubble, and I don't want to malign the entire community because there are a number of people in Midland who are very concerned about this, but they can't be public about it. They cannot be public about it because somehow their family is tied to Dow. Somehow they work for Dow. Their small business that they work for is tied to Dow. There are so many, many people, and that's why I go back. I just don't think that, you know, sometimes on communities, you see these, awards for outstanding citizens, and you see these awards for heroes and this and that. I'll tell you what, I'll go back to as we're closing out this conversation, I want to go back to Diane Hebert in Midland, Michigan, who really put this dioxin issue on everybody's radar screen. And who had her, Diane's just this tiny petite woman, but she has got the strength, just unbelievable strength and this backbone that she took on. I mean, she was maligned in her community, made fun of, laughed at. If the world had more people like Diane Hebert in it, who spoke articulately, who spoke the truth, who defended her community, who defended her children, her family, your children, my children, everybody's children, the world would be a better place. And she truly, as I said, she was my mentor. We all owe Diane a lot. And I just can't say enough good things about her. But it's because of her we are where we are with this issue today. Because one citizen.
Honoring the good people, the strong people, that's where we need to go with this, truly.
Yeah,
because that's how I'm sure that's one major way of getting more of those kind of people.
Yep. And this was a mother, defending her kids.
So is she in the idiot cycle?
No, Diane is not in the idiot cycle. She's not in the idiot cycle.
Well, maybe some movie ought to be made about her. That'd be really
cool. I tell you what, she is just she is the Midland, Michigan dioxin Norma Rae. I'm telling you, just absolutely. I saw Diane one time walk up to Dow was proposing to do a health study, which was just another way to create a delay, and the state was. This was during the Engler administration, and the state was basically being a front for Dow, saying that the health department was going to do it. We had emails that said otherwise, and Diane walked up to the podium, and she ripped that study up in a million pieces. A million pieces in front of a huge audience of agency people, citizens, whatever, and she just very articulately read them the Riot Act. Well, because she did that act of defiance, of course, for some gutless public officials, they're like, well, you can't reason with the woman who would do that.
There you go. Yeah.
I'm like, you can't reason what? Because
she
tore something up, she tore some papers up, and you think you can't reason with her? You haven't got the guts to engage her is what the issue is.
True.
Yeah.
Very true.
But it is. It's about people deciding what you want for your community, how you want to live, and not being afraid to say what's on your mind, beautifully strong, and not being afraid of public ridicule and corporate intimidation and
everything more important
else.
Things, much more important things like integrity and courage.
Yes. Yeah.
And honor and duty.
Yes.
Yep. And a beautiful and healthy water and healthy kids and healthy parents and healthy grandparents. And
so many times people say, well, people don't tend to be as sympathetic to people who are old and get cancer. As a nurse, I see this. P- people think, well, you got to die of something. But you know what?
Yeah,
cancer is
right.
a horrible way to die.
Horrible
it is a horrible
to
way to die. And
horrible
people want
die.
Extra time with their family, and they go through the chemo, and they go through the radiation, and they're sick, and they're sick. And it's a terrible way. I just watched my stepfather pass away. My mother was married to this man for 30 years, loved him dearly, love him, and I miss him. But I watched him go die of an asbestos-related cancer, and it was not pretty. It was not pretty. I don't care how old you are. Yes, there's something that tugs at our hearts about young kids with cancer and their life being cut off short, but nobody should have to die an ugly, dehumanizing death due to such a horrible disease. Such a horrible disease.
When it's such a horrible disease, I was terrified. When I would read those Reader's Digest articles back in like the 70s and stuff when I was growing up, and you read about people just, they get cancer out of the blue, you know. That was the way it was supposed to be. You just get this out of the blue, you know. I was so terrified by that. I worried about it. It harmed me just worrying about it, let alone the realities of poor people that actually get it, get all that horrible treatment, the chemo, the radiation burns them right up, and then to die of that in the end after all that.
Yep.
It's such a ghastly disease. I cannot understand it. Truly, people are so much lower than what I can conceive of them actually being to not be on fire about bringing an end to this nightmare of all this cancer and all this pollution.
But we're not inclined as a nation to respond to things that happen slowly. It does. I mean, look at all the people who die of cancer. I am not diminishing what happened on 9/11 in any way, shape, or form. It was horrific. It was painful for this nation as individuals, collectively, whatever. But 3,000 people died, and how horrible. Yeah, well, how many people are dying of breast cancer? How many kids are dying of these oddball, you know, cancers that, you know, in heavily contaminated areas? How many Vietnam veterans have suffered prostate cancer, thyroid cancers, lymphomas, all kinds of cancers? But we can't seem to get outraged about that.
It's very strange. It seems very strange to me. I'm outraged about it. I battle constantly with, you know, just trying to be good-spirited and kind of good and not angry and full of hate for these corporations and these government people that have just led us to this horrible point in time. And I'm doing pretty good, actually. I used to be much angrier than I am now.
Right. But you know what I think
I feel? There's something beautiful about being good-intentioned, even when it's a horrible situation. You know, it feels good.
Yes,
to truly
it does.
Walk that path.
It does. It does. Well, I think I've often found myself in very, not dark places, but places where I didn't want to be with this issue, where I didn't feel like I could do this with a happy heart, a glad heart, a committed heart.
Yep.
And I have to, because when I can't do that anymore, I'm not effective. I'm not effective. And so I totally understand what you're saying there. But I think you have to do it to some degree with a happy heart. You have to be gentle with yourself. You have to realize that there are setbacks, that this is a roller coaster ride. There are good days, there are bad days, ups, downs, and you just continue to plod along and hope that someday down the road, future generations will stand on a clean riverbank. They'll be eating clean fish, and that perhaps you had a part in securing that. And I think that's what all of us in Lone Tree Council hope for. And that's why we, you know, stick to this issue like we do.
Give us the websites that you want people to visit and, you know, a little of a wrap up.
Yeah, we can do that. The first website is one that's the oldest and longest, and it's extremely encyclopedic in its content, but everything about this contamination is on www.trwnews.net. That's the Tittabawassee River Watch. That site is run by Gary and Kathy Henry, who are the lead plaintiffs in Henry versus Dow, and it's an absolutely tremendous, tremendous website. And then the newly established website that Lone Tree Council did is www.cleanwatershedcampaign.org, and that is strictly following EPA's activities on this cleanup since their takeover a year ago. Also has some issues on there regarding the dioxin reassessment, the interim guidelines, and a number of EPA activities on dioxin. And those are two of the best sites. The state of Michigan also has a long site at www.mdnre.gov. And then just click on dioxin, and it'll take you to an extensive link there also. But I encourage your listeners to visit those sites if they want more information, and probably more information than they're going to want on it. But the sites do speak to how long a struggle this has been for us.
It's been a long struggle, and I'm sure it's made you very strong and beautiful and courageous and full of many good things. And just to figure out this thing you said a minute ago, figuring out how to be joyous and how to be happy of heart in dealing with something like this, you know, in a certain kind of way. I was talking to a person, you know, just this this associate of Betigo, and he was pointing out that the wolves are what create the great speed in running and the, you know, elegance and the, you know, the strength and the just full of energy of the deer. And so in a certain way, you know, sure, it's horrible to live a life that's got all this in it, but there is this one aspect where that, you know, we certainly have risen to a higher level than we probably would have risen to if we hadn't had these enemies that are so, you know, powerful and just demanding such a high level of our being to, you know, to counter them.
Well, for sure. I think you grow and you develop over time, and you start to realize, you know, initially you come out of the gate reactionary, and then you learn that that zaps your energy, and then you start picking your fights, not letting them pick them for you, and you start picking your priorities. And I do. I think you're exactly right. Those things that don't kill us make us stronger,
right,
and wiser and smarter and better. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I'm a huge, huge supporter of citizens. Pick an issue, but get involved. Don't just sit on the sidelines and watch life go by. Find something you're passionate about and go after it and commit to it and get involved in it, because at the end of the day, you're better for it. You know, and you have to acknowledge, too, though, sometimes it's extremely tough on your families. I mean, there are times my husband was like, you're going out the door again. I recognize that I could not do this without the support from our chairman at Lone Tree Council, without the support of my husband, who, you know, reins me in when I need to be reined in, and, you know, puts a fresh set of eyes sometimes on issues for me, critiques a lot of my writing, those kinds of things. So it is because of the love and support of some very close people that you are able to go out there and keep doing this. And
yeah, I remember my dad would always, he wasn't an activist. I would not call him an activist. He was a very, you know, high character, like lots of integrity, federal veterinarian, and he stood up to some bad things and made sure they did not continue that way, and made it, you know, by the book, by the law, you know, what needed to be done to protect, you know, the food supply here based on what his part of the job was. He certainly had a lot of integrity. He wasn't an activist. He would criticize me some, saying that, you know, I was too hot and a little too, like, kind of like more like this rebel type. But still, when it came right down to it, he was always there. He always said, you know, you went to college, you learned chemistry, you learned biology. Now you're doing something with it. You know, honor. He gave me a lot of honor, and it's so great to have people like that that will, you know,
it is,
embrace you and, you know, just give you some, yep, strengthening and energy for continuing this battle we're in.
It is, and you know, and unfortunately for a lot of citizens, they feel disarmed, inadequate to try to deal with some issues, particularly, you know, this dioxin issue, because there is so much science involved. But I'm here to tell people, I think Lone Tree Council has made a huge difference in this fight. And none of us are scientists. We're nurses and history teachers and postal workers and General Motors workers and accountants and take your pick. But You know, people get intimidated by the science, and you know, and that's a tool that Dow tries to use. We were actually called at a meeting one time, just a nurse, a history professor, and a housewife. Just a nurse, a history professor, and just a housewife.
Just.
And, you know, that's an intimidation tactic, because at the end of the day, you don't need to know anything about science. You just need to know that you have a right to live on clean property,
right,
and that you have a right to have clean fish in your river and to have fishable, swimmable, navigable waters. That's all you have to know. You don't need to get in. You don't need to get into that debate, because you can't win that debate with them.
Exactly. Well, the truth it is, they're cheaters. The debate can be won because
yes.
The science, the truth of it is, this is not rocket science. This is not nuclear physics. This is not quantum theory. This is just this basic exposure, how much disease. It's been looked at a lot in animals. It's been looked at a lot in Vietnam vets,
right,
and chemistry factory workers who produce pesticides, including the ones Dow produced, this 2,4,5-T. Plenty of science has been done. Huge
right.
amount of consensus. Truly, this is just another matter of where bad people are getting their way. This question of, you know, the
right.
uncertainty in the science. There's no uncertainty.
Dow Chemical likes to throw out their healthy worker study all the time. Our healthy worker study says this. So, you know, you go up to the podium and you'll say to Dr. Carson or Dr. whoever's up there from Dow, because they have MDs and, you know,
oh, yeah.
out there in the community talking. And so you go up there and say, but, okay, here's your healthy worker study, but isn't it the truth that in 1999 you had to amend your report to TSCA at EPA to show a 15-year latency period for prostate and stomach cancer in your employees in the health study that you did? They dance around it. I said, this is just a yes or a no question. That's all I'm asking you. It's a yes or a no question.
Right.
Well, not exactly, Michelle. Well, not exactly how. But they never answer it. Then they go on and they talk for so long that the people in the media who are covering it and the people in the audience are like, what was the question?
Exactly.
I mean, they're
right.
so deft at it. They're so deft. It's just,
yeah.
it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yes. So anyways, I do have to run.
Yes. This has been wonderful. I think you're
right.
maybe my favorite interview of all these. I just love the way you just got, I can just feel it. You just are vibrant with this energy of fighting the good fight, you know, and being this beautiful, strong, great person. You know, it's just so cool.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that so much. And again, encourage your audience, watch the Idiot Cycle,
yep.
go to the TRW website, watch The Long Shadow, glean some information, and fight the good fight.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Have a great day. This is Don Hassig with Loving the Earth, Pollution-Free Revolution. We have just been talking for a beautiful experience with Michelle Hurd Reddick. She is a member of the Lone Tree Council. She is a beautiful warrior against the Dow Chemical Company, which has poisoned so much of the state of Michigan, this Tittabawassee River and the Saginaw River and the Lake Huron. We're wrapping it up now. Thanks for listening. This has been a long interview, but it's been a very, very powerful interview. I'm just so happy to have been a part of creating it. Loving the Earth, Pollution-Free Revolution. Have a great day.